Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, just relax, everybody, would you please? Okay, enough about Gary Lehman from last week's show. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of The Suspendables. We're getting close to 99 shows coming up, and we're going to have a guest. We're going to have a guest on our 99th show. Okay, 99. Maybe, okay, sit, pause for a second, because it's going to take you a while to figure that out. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but the 99th show, number 13, Kenny Linsman. No, we're not. How are you, Rusty?
I'm good, buddy. I'm good.
What's going on? What's going on, Russ?
Well, over the weekend, I've told everybody about my friend, Ronald Forge, who passed away. They had a memorial for him at Sherwood Country Club, and he was a big supporter of all the employees of the club. So they had a memorial golf tournament, just members, and we had about 50. Mm-hmm. And then we had a little dinner after, live auction. We probably raised about $100,000 for the employees fund so they can apply for medical needs or scholarships for their kids. And yours truly and his group, we Steve Dark, Peter Gerlach, and Tony Tesoro, myself, won the tournament. My buddy Steve got a hole in one on 12.
No, he didn't.
He did.
No, he didn't.
Did. Yeah, it was great. We had it was a good time, raised a bunch of money. We all got to say, tell a few stories about Ron, and it was just a great day.
Right. You kind of glazed over that for a second. I want to back up a bit. So it was this guy's decision to raise dough and that he's going to give it to the employees of the golf course?
So he was a big, he was a big supporter for helping out our employees. He always felt like, they weren't appreciated enough. So he started this, let's give to this fund. And I didn't know too much about it. He had talked about it. And so when he passed, we all decided, cause we couldn't have a memorial and we couldn't have a service. Let's have a golf tournament because the golf course is open to our members. And
yep.
And so they just threw around this idea, and before you knew it, we had 50 people each threw in $1,000 to play our own golf course, and all the money, 100% of the proceeds went to the employees. Well, then they got a few live auction items, and nice. Before you knew it, we were at 100,000. They read a few letters from the employees. One member had two family members go through cancer treatment, costing him out of pocket $17,000, and the guys, right. Cutting the grass at the golf course. And he the letter, it was a tearjerker.
Sure.
And then the next one was another medical reason and then something else. And it was just, it was incredible. All these members donating their money, and we knew it was going to all our employees. So that cool, work man. At the golf club. Yeah. It's nice. So good weekend.
And $1,000 to play in a golf tournament in Sherwood is, that's actually about $300 less than it is for an 18-hole green fee. well done. On the show today, we've got a surprise, and I'll bring that up in a minute. If you've been following our shows for all the past 90-plus or whatever we've done, they've been great. Okay, they've been great. Rusty's taking the world by storm. People love it. We've had tremendous support for the show, and I could never have enough time in the day to send Rusty all the emails I get about how fantastic they think we are, okay? However, I'll be the first to tell you that Russ is full of shit, okay? A lot of times on his stories, okay? It's like, really, Russ? Really? You had dinner with the Pope? I don't think so, okay? I don't think so. You and the president of the United States, I don't know how to sleep over at the White House. Okay, I don't think so. Okay, there's a lot of stuff. Okay, so One of the great stories you did tell, Rusty, was about a group of you guys who had a massive slobbering contest at Pebble Beach one weekend, okay, where you went with the boys. And I remember when you first told this story, the highlight was some guy got fined $25,000, okay, for something that happened at Pebble. And we're going to bring him on in a couple of minutes here. So some other stuff we want to talk about. There was a great comeback story, Russ. I'm a huge fan of the comeback in sports. You know, we think of Mario Lemieux coming back from cancer. There's, you know, Saku Koivu was always one of my favorites who came back from stomach cancer when he laced him up and skated on the ice again for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm a golfer. Ben Hogan almost killed himself in a car accident. I think it was with a bus, completely shattered his entire body, you know, from it and came back. Rocky Blyer, famous story, you know, was in the Vietnam War and got, you know, was in the middle of an explosion, ended up with a bunch of shrapnel and came back to play again for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Greg LeMond, okay, Russ, speaking of comebacks, I didn't know this. This is from this morning, looking this up. Of course, you know, won several Tour de France's, okay, but was away from it for 2 years. You know, we brought up cancer, okay, recovering from that. You know, maybe, you know, concussions, we're going to talk about in a second. No, a bit of a hunting accident where his cousin shot him by mistake. And he still got pellets in his body. And he came back to win two more Tour de France's. I'm like, that's a strong comeback. It comes on the heels of a story, Rusty. Thomas Hickey. Okay, let me just read this to you. Hickey discusses return after nearly a two-year hiatus. Best feeling I've had in a long time. Thomas Hickey opened up about his difficult journey after playing his first NHL game in almost 2 years Saturday night. The New York Islander defenseman collected a pair of assists in a 6-1 victory over the Flyers. He suited up for the first time since May 3rd, 2019. His injuries, including a concussion, had derailed his career. In addition, his brother Dan died of cancer at the age of 33 last March.
Unreal.
He goes on to say it meant everything, really, Hickey said when asked about being a key part of the Saturday's win. Just to be with the guys was big. Then to chip in was huge. It was a very emotional night. I'm really happy with the effort of the guys, and it's nice to come back and get a win. That's the biggest thing, and I just have a lot of good feelings right now. Hickey added he dealt with doubt about whether he would ever get an opportunity again to play in the NHL. He says, you just don't know. There's so many factors that go into it, so you just don't know when your time's going to come, and every day that goes by, you feel like maybe it's a bit further away, but that's not always reality. It's just how you feel. So that was the doubt, but I believe in myself, and I've reinforced that, so I was prepared for it. The 32-year-old said he felt great about being back on the ice and having another chance to make his family proud. It's the best feeling I've had in a long time. Obviously, personally and professionally, it's been tough, and there are people that you want to do things for to make them happy because we've had a really tough go. I've been thinking about my brother, and I've always wanted to just do good things while he was battling and fighting, and to show him that I can play for him. And I think that just carries over, even though he's not with us. That's in the back of your mind. So those are the things that you're thinking about. And it's been a tough road, but I feel like it's been worth the wait. What a story, Rusty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Good for him. Good for his family.
Well, you've been around it, Russ. You know, Mario, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. Mario found out he had, Hodgkin's? Is that right?
Yeah.
And, geez, I was watching some of those comebacks on, one of these programs. And when he came back and he got a standing ovation from the Philadelphia Flyers fans in the first game back on the road. And, he had a great comment and he goes, you know, he's something about, you know, you've done something special. They appreciate you when you get a standing ovation in Philly when you're playing for the Penguins, but
especially when Philly boos their own players.
Yeah. Yeah, you did what?
Yeah. It brings up this sort of cool thing about sports, Russ. I have fun with you about the dig about, you know, Stanley Cup. But not everyone can win the Stanley Cup. Not everyone can win a major, the Masters. Not everyone can, of course, win the Super Bowl or the NBA title. You know, we get a lot of people weighing in on what you meant to them as a fan watching you play, Russ, right? And at no time, right? The comments are unbelievable. You know, emotional for some people about when they watched you play and you've signed an autograph or you met guys, you showed up at their house, you've done charity stuff. At no time did any of these people ever say, you know, I'm a huge fan of Russ's, but, you know, I would have been a really big fan if he won a Stanley Cup. You just don't hear about it. And when you hear Hickey's take here on his life in hockey, it's like, this guy's got it going on. You know, what a really cool thing. Never in any of that does he talk about, I got to win a Stanley Cup. You know, he talks like he did, Russ, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And his life journey, it is. And so it's great that, you know, to go through what he was going through and then to have to be there watching his brother and you know, you transfer your issues and focus on the person you love. And so I the guy to be able to make the comeback and play and his brother didn't make it. I mean, it right. was just the, something else. He's not worried about the Stanley Cup when all that he's been through personally.
Speaking of that, Rusty, speaking of the Stanley Cup, we got the compressed schedule. We got this really, you know, crazy times for everybody. The league is pulling it off, the NHL. They're going to bang out these 56 games. Because of COVID, sometimes you look at the schedule and go, these guys got 6 games in hand. because, of course, they had to postpone some games, right? So
yeah,
they'll catch all that up. So it's getting tough for us. You know, we like it. We thought we did. Most people do like the all-Canadian division. But some people now are saying, okay, it's too much with this 3 games against the same team. And I want to get your thoughts on it. And one of them is it's killer if you lose a couple of games against one team where they come in for 3 nights over the course of 5 or 6 days, that it's really hard to get keyed up for, especially if you're like, for example, the Ottawa Senators, who are getting drilled. Okay. We're getting drilled. So my question, Russ, for you is this thing's people are starting to position themselves. Ottawa will not make these playoffs. They're 14 points behind. What do you do to get motivated now, Russ, under this deal?
Well, Ottawa's going through a rebuild, right? So their motivation is to prove that they can stay in the league, the players. And the older players probably want to hang on to a career. And so they've got motivation. Selfishly, they've got personal motivation. The team doesn't look like it's going to win, but everybody there is trying to hang on to something and grow. If you're young, you're trying to show. And older players, you know, still want to play. And when you're on a losing team, there's not a lot of teams out there going, okay, I want that guy because he was on the worst team in the league. Coaches, I don't know. It's different motivations. And sometimes when you play against a team like that, you can let your guard down too and then get spanked. Mm-hmm. So you gotta worry about not playing up to snuff when you're playing against a team like them. But
well, they could be the spoiler, right? That's the other
thing.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. What are the players saying to each other, Russ? If you are the Ottawa Senators, like sort of if it was off the record for some of these guys having to go to the rink every day, it's like, fuck, I want out of here. Okay, I've had enough. Erik Karlsson last week, who got traded from Ottawa.
Yeah.
Because they're in a rebuild. Funny. And then he goes to
I just left a rebuild.
I know. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So he's in San Jose, right? Is where he is now.
Yeah.
And he's going, I'm tired of being on a team in a rebuild. I said, I gotta ask Rusty, does the player, are they in a position here, Russ, to go to their team going, I don't want to be in a rebuild anymore. I want to trade me, you know, duh. I want to go to someone who's going to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, it depends on the point of career the player's in, because if he's part of the rebuild, they don't want to trade him. But if he adds value to a tradable asset, and they're going to get something, then he might not have to say anything. They might come to him and say, okay, we've got an opportunity to trade you. Do you want to stick it out here, or would you rather us move you? So there could be some conversations going on with players, but they're obviously not going to trade Tkachuk or some of these young guys that they're building this new team around. So it just depends on the player. If somebody young and one of their stars came to them, that wouldn't be good because, you know, they're banking on that, building a team around that player.
So if you want out, Russ, you're on a team, they're in this rebuild. You look at it and go, I've been playing hockey now for 10 years in the league. I've paid my dues. I don't want to be part of this. Who lets it be known to the team, Russ? Do you get your agent to say, make a call, or do you march in there to the GM and say, here's my concerns?
It could go either way. Player could do it himself or call his agent. But
what would you do? Not show up.
I mean, I did it. I went to Serge Savard and asked to be traded. So I did it myself, but it's not comfortable for sure.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Once again, there was this great story that you told, among many, that you went to Pebble Beach with some buddies, had a great time, yada, yada, yada. And then you just sort of threw it in there at the end. this was a couple months ago when you first told me. And then a guy got nipped for $25,000, got a fine there.
Set the table again because the golf trip started about 40 years ago with eight friends. And it's called Tataway. And the loser every year has to plan the next year's gathering, and it can't be at the same place. So they started in Canada and then started going down to the US and traveling around. And I've been a few times, and this particular trip, it was 28 guys. It was either 24 or 28 guys, maybe 24. And we met all in Pebble Beach, and two guys planned the trip from the year before, and it was just perfect. We stayed on property and we played Pebble, and we were there for 4 days, and there was a Calcutta. The Calcutta was around 170,000. And if you get, if you get bought, you automatically own 25% of your team.
Sure.
So, or not your team, of yourself. So you're in it, right? The last day, the fourth day, the guys who are out of it are just pounding, having beers, drinking, having a great time. Sure. And, you know, if you're out of it, you're out of it, but you're still playing golf. So the top five, I think, are in the prize money. So then that's the Tataway. And it's been going on for a long time. Great. Some old friends started it. And then I've played in it a few times.
Okay, so we want to find out the truth, okay, about this trip. Okay, we don't want to, there's always the Russ factor in some of these stories. Okay, we call it the Russ factor, and I always said with all these amazing things that Russ has been through, I got a fact check. Okay, a couple of these things. One of the guys in this Tataway trip, okay, that Russ has been on. Was MC. Okay. We're gonna make an anonymous. It's like watching one of those shows where they cover the guy's head because he's an undercover cop, and they disguise his voice. So we're gonna keep MC anonymous because he's gonna tell us this story about a massive fine that happened on one of these nights. Are you there, MC? Do we have you?
Yeah, Jimmy, I'm here.
Ooh, good. Sounds like that's nice. I like a guest that comes on. It sounds like they're chewing 10 pounds of ground beef. That's good. I like this voice, man. This is good.
Is it ground beef or the cigarettes from last night?
You must be a friend of Russ's. Okay. Our White Claw Prince, that Russ is. So, First,
actually, I got this voice from sitting beside him on a golf cart, inhaling his secondhand smoke from the 17 cigars around he smokes.
Sure. Yeah, good. That makes sense. So you and Russ go back. How do you know each other? You're old buddies. Tell us there. Give us the backstory.
I think that we met on Tataway, and then we're both at a golf club together. So we're buds in that way, and we play a lot of golf together, and families hang out and those sorts of things. So
that's nice. Yeah, that's nice and cute and everything. But let's hear what happened on this Tataway trip to Pebble Beach. Okay.
So if it's over to me, the final day, as he mentioned, is when the prize money's handed out. And on the back nine of Pebble Beach, we were out of the money. And so we started indulging in a few Arnie Palmers and having a good time.
I like the way Rusty people only know Arnold Palmer, some of them, from his cocktail that he designed, not from his golf. Anyway, go ahead. So a few Arnold Palmers. Yeah.
So we get to 18, and the group that I'm in is completely out of the money. So we're indulging ourselves, and we're waiting for the final group to come in. And I think the first place about 40% of the pot. So it's about 80K.
Nice. Yeah.
And so it turns out, after a lot of math, that was seems like it should be easy math to do, but with this group, math is a bit of a challenge.
Not their strong suit.
They're getting out the abacus and trying to figure it out. And so we keep drinking, and about 10 minutes later, they come up and they go, "We got a tie."
Oh, there we go. Wow.
They got to have a playoff hole. And so I had a caddy, Jimmy. And so if you've played at Pebble before, the 18 green down, beautiful setting by the lodge, we're going up to 1 tee to play a sudden death playoff for the 80 bananas. Yeah. And so seeing as I was walking, and I was having trouble walking probably by that time, but I needed to get a ride to the first tee to watch the festivities. And so I hopped on the back of one of the guy's golf carts. And so it was me and another guy. And so because we're so big, the cart can barely make it up the hill. So about halfway up the hill, I start beaking the driver, saying like, "Can you step on it? We're going to miss, the big show, the big tee off on one." And so we natter back and forth at each other, and about 5 feet from the top of the hill, he slams on the brakes and he says, "Fuck you. You want to drive? Jump in and you drive." So if anybody has been there before, they'll know that. So when you go up that little pathway, you end up on 17 mile drive for about 200 meters before you go back in by the putting green and the mall up to 1 tee. So I know that now, but I didn't know that at the time. So anyways, I'm like, I get in the driver's seat, and I press on the gas, and you know how golf carts kind of jump a little bit when they are on so it jumps, and I do a straight left-handed turn, and that happened to be a roadway, and there was a Mercedes there, which I crashed into the back of it.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, here we go. I don't think Russ ever mentioned that.
So as luck would have it, the lady had a bumper hitch on the back of her Mercedes, which I hit pretty square. So there's a little indentation on the bumper of the cart, like not much damage at all. And so I think nothing of it, reverse. And next thing you know, there's a security guard running over with a whistle. Beep, 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 beep. Hey, stop in the name of the law. Stop in the name of the law. I saw that.
Right.
And we're like, "There's no damage. It's not a big deal. We're staying here." And so what happens next is a situation where, to all the listeners, don't do this. So he asks me, he goes, "Well, have you been drinking?" And I'm like, "Drinking? I mean, what do you mean? It's Pebble." Have I been drinking? You guys have been serving me. You guys have been serving us. The cart girl practically followed us around the entire time. Have I been drinking?
Sure.
It's Pebble. Come on. It's
Pebble. We're day four of drinking. Yeah.
And, and he's like, well, you look like you've had a little too much. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't, but we've got a big $80,000 playoff to watch. So I got to go. See you later. And anyways, I start to drive away and he's not going to let this go. So he starts kind of chasing us up and I'm like, well, this isn't good. So we pull up to the first tee. The guy, security guard, beep, 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 blowing his whistle. Like, I don't know. It's like we're in Europe or something. And the pro is standing on the tarmac or on the cart path right by the first tee, losing his mind because one of the other bigwig guys on this trip is having a whiz on the first tee of Pebble Beach.
And the pro arranged all, like, the pro was so into this whole tournament thing. Like, he was good until that moment. Yeah. Can you imagine allowing all these guys to go from 18 to the first tee for a playoff at Pebble? I mean, it was unheard of. And then he pulls up there and one of our guys is taking a leak on the tee box. It went south.
No, this is good. This is very good.
Yeah. So he's rolling his hose right in front of the webcam as I pull up with a security guard chasing us about some little minor little fender bending back there. Yeah. So anyways, it didn't go good. The pro was not very sympathetic to my plight. No. And the security guard's like, you're going to have to stay here. I'm going to detain you. And I'm like, for what? Because I think you're over the limit. And I'm like, for what? Well, driving a golf cart at 3 miles an hour. In a nice way, I tell the security guard to get lost. And we're staying at Spanish Bay, and there's a shuttle that goes between the three golf courses, Spanish Bay, Spyglass, and Pebble, just as a loop. So I'm like, I'm not staying here.
Ooh.
You know, get out of, get lost.
He says, I got to detain you. And you go, F you, I'm taking off.
Yes.
Good one. This is good. This is getting better all the time.
Okay. He's a little puke, the security guard. I mean, he's a freaking knob.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Anyhow, I gave them my name, my number, and my room number, and said if there whatever the damage is to the car, it basically like was a punch the into the bumper of the cart. Like it's like a $300 repair job. So I go back to I should have forgot to tell you I was wearing silver pants and a pink golf shirt and
beautiful.
Exactly and silver Puma golf shoes. So I'm hard to ID. So I get on the shuttle. I get back to Spanish Bay and I'm trying to hightail it down to my room. And the security guard at Spanish Bay is like, is that you? Is that you? I'm like, nope, not me.
We've been expecting you.
I'm the only guy with a pink shirt and silver pants on at the resort. So I rush down to my room, get in there, and I bar the door. I'm like, these guys are actually like serious about this. So I'm like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go for a walk and I'm just going to get lost because these guys are crazy. Sure. They're going to come and take me to jail for a golf cart violation. So I walk out of the terrace and by this time, there's some guys partying in a room down the way. And they see me walking out on the grass and they're like, hey, MC, come in for a drink. And I'm like, that sounds like a great idea. Exactly. So I go into their room and we keep drinking. And because there's some bigwig lawyers on the trip, Jimmy, who are like, this will all go away. These guys, they don't know what they're talking about. We'll just tell them, you know, we'll to go away. So about 45 minutes later, the phone rings in the room and it's one of these bigwig lawyers. He's totally buckled at the front desk trying to negotiate with this state trooper for my release.
This guy gets so hammered every trip that his eyes, we call him jellyfish eyes, because he gets
the lawyer.
Oh yeah. So he's just completely
nickname,
completely bubbled.
Okay.
So he convinces me, he's like, hey, just come down here and make a statement. And then that's what I mean for my release. Like, so these guys can kind of get off the trail of old MC. Right. So just come down and make a statement. This will all be over in about 15 minutes. So I go, okay. Like, these guys are like mega smart, like,
sure, lawyers. They know what they're doing. Yep.
They know what they're doing. I go down to render my statement to the state trooper
in the same outfit.
That's the problem.
Looking like Dolly Parton.
I'll come back to that in a bit. But for all you listeners out there, do not always change your clothes, like shave your beard, cut your hair.
Sure.
So I'm going down to the front of the hotel there, and the state trooper's walking up the. And he asked me if I am who I am. And I said, yeah. I said to him, am I going to need a lawyer for this? And before you could say Jimmy Jerome, he spins me around, throws me up against the wall and cuffs me.
Now we're cooking here. Now we're going somewhere.
And he goes, looks like we're going to have this conversation downtown.
Lovely.
Yeah. 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 So he walks me out of Spanish Bay in the bracelets. And the only guy who came to my defense is Rusty. So I'm walking out, and Russ is all over him, yapping at him. And he's like, he finally turns around and says, if you don't shut up, you're going to come with him. So he backs off, takes me to Salinas, California. And he goes, listen, you've been very nice. And if you blow under, I'll drive you back to Pebble. If you blow over, you're going to jail.
Holy Jesus.
I was 0-for-2 on the... on the blow, on the blow jobs.
He gave you a second shot.
He actually, yeah. The sad part about it was the second blow is higher than the first. So,
okay.
So he's taking me to jail, and I'm in a pink shirt and silver pants and golf shoes. And, there's some bedding that goes on. So he's got me like face down on the car in the middle of the, like when you pull into jail, and he's taking my belt off and all this stuff. And I got a watch and I got about $3,000 in my pocket, and he's like counting it out on the cop car. And like, I'm in complete depression mode here, because it's like, you're taking me to jail. And this is actually for real. So he's like, you got to watch me counting this. And I'm like, I tried to bribe him. I'm like, take the watch, take the money. No. I just don't take me into jail. And he's like, it can't happen like that. So anyways, I go into jail and I end up in a concrete block. So here I am. I'm in Salinas, California. I'm in a pink shirt, silver shoes, silver pants, with a fair amount of guys who are like not dressed.
No.
And some of them had been in there for days and couldn't make $300 in bail. Like, it's not a great place to be. But the tie to Russ and to hockey, maybe he could maybe talk to this, is like, everybody's innocent in jail. It was kind of like a locker room atmosphere. Guys are telling jokes, and it was, you know, everybody was innocent. So they call me out after a couple, I don't know, 6 hours. Yeah. And they write me they show me my ticket. But this is part of the camaraderie in jail, is I'm starting to get advice from these guys about, hey, when they ask you for bail, ask for a discount.
Oh, come on.
So I'm like, what do you mean a discount? And he's like, listen, just ask them for a discount, and you know, they usually give you a discount in terms of bail. So he comes out there. He's like, that's no wonder California's broke. It's like a dot matrix printer, little printout. And the guy goes, it's $10,000 to get out of jail.
Wow.
So I said, well, can you blue light me down to $5,000? And he says to me, let me see what I can do. So he goes back into his little hut and he comes back out with his big pen and he strikes out the 10 and he goes, it's your lucky day. We can do 5.
Who froze up the 5? Rusty, was he there with the 5 large?
No, I'm back at the hotel still.
Another guy on the, another bud from ours back home named Magic. He magically bailed me out.
How about when they counted your 3K? Because you remember you gave them 3. It was in hundreds, wasn't it? When you got out, didn't they give you back like 5s and 20s or something like that?
Yeah. I walk out to get my stuff. And she looks at the little ticket I gave her. And she looks at me like when you're at Disneyland through that little metal microphone thing. And she goes, honey, I don't know if I have this much money in the till.
Great stuff, MC. Okay, you're, you know, you take the cake. You're kicking things off here for stories that we're going to get to tell.
Fuck, that was good.
Thanks for having me, boys.
We may see you later, MC. Take it easy, brother. Okay.
MC, thanks, pal. Thanks for doing that.
Talk to you.
I'll talk to you soon.
The money wasn't the same, Russ, but the story's better. Okay.
The
story's better.
So it is a drinking trip. You got to be able to play golf 4 days in a row and you got to be able to drink because it is definitely a boys trip. And I drove up there because I met all the guys there. So I said, hey, why don't I buy all the wine? Because in California, a lot of places you can bring your own wine to dinners. And, you know, when you go out with that many people, the bill is going to be crazy because of the wine. So we get a boardroom off the restaurant at the hotel we're staying at. And we got, like I said, around 24 guys. So
that's trouble.
I thought, you know, 48 bottles of wine for dinner that night would probably be appropriate. And I told I went earlier and asked them if could we bring our own wine for dinner night? And the guy goes, yeah. So we get in there and we're all ordering. I put the 48 bottles down on a table beside the big long table we had. And the guy comes in and goes, you didn't tell me you were going to bring 48 bottles. He goes, I thought you'd bring a few. So he was pissed off. And then one of the guys brought out music. And so he said, he came in, this guy, he was so offended, so pissed off. And he started giving it to me because I was the point person, you know, he's giving it to me. And he goes, all the people next door are pissed off. And I had bought all this great wine. Sure. So I went, oh, okay, I'll be nice. And so I opened 2 bottles of wine. I walked next door to the table to table. And I said, I'm so sorry. Apparently we're being too loud and you guys are upset. I'd like to pour you a glass of wine. And they're like, are you kidding me? We want to be in that room with you guys. The guy was totally lying to me.
That's so funny, man.
Total bullshit. He was the one who had the problem, not us. But
you should have said, we're going to let you meet a guy who looks like he walked off Star Trek in silver pants and a pink blouse that he wore playing golf. I'm just thinking, Rusty, that 48 bottles, that's 4 cases of wine, right? 12 bottles in a case. Imagine, you know, you need 2 guys to carry that, coming and going, what's going on? Yeah, we're just sitting down for dinner. You know, most guys would be, I'm starting a wine cellar, you know, this will keep me going for a few months. And you coming and going, yeah.
Well, we were staying in that hotel, so I figured whatever we didn't drink, we just take back to our room. But it was, you know, it's a drinking trip. It's definitely, there's some guys on that trip that don't get out of the house too often. So they get pretty loose.
Oh, not those guys. Oh no.
And like, we have one of the guys on the trip, Grant Olson. He's just a great guy, but by the fourth day he's right in the hunt. And then he, like MC said, he folds because he's having too much fun. And there's on and on. There's so many great stories.
There was
along the way.
Well, you know, when the fantasy cap happened in Phoenix, Rusty, when it first started, there's many, many stories about guys who, you know, they paid their $10,000 to come and play, and they get a little fired up, Rusty. They get a little fired up. And I remember, I don't want to give his name, but he's from Ottawa. And he got so excited and got trashed, okay, that night. Got absolutely trashed. And not realizing he had to play hockey at 9:30 in the morning. I'll tell you the guy's name after, but anyway, so that was fun. He's absolutely freaking hammered. Been up all night. Okay. And he's hammered And then, but he wants to play, but he's starting to get a little bit sick. Okay. And anyway, steps on the ice and falls and breaks his jaw. Okay.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
What year was that?
Was in one of the first years at Phoenix.
No way. I don't remember that.
You might've been there. Yeah.
I would have been. I was there to the last two because I was in living in Hawaii.
Yeah. Snapped his, cracked his,
no way. Cracked I don't his jaw. Remember that.
And was going, how am I gonna drink?
Your straw.
Anyway, okay, we're gonna end the show on that, Rusty. That was thanks a lot, MC, for coming on. We got the real story. So what's your golf trip story? You know, what's your maybe hockey teams, right? They go to tournaments. There's gotta be some great stories about guys traveling with their men's team.
One other quick golf trip story is that same Tataway, we're in Coeur d'Alene, and same thing. Last day, we're guys who are out of it are just having a great time. So two of our pals are at this is the golf course with the floating green. You hit, and then you get on this little boat, and you go across like a water taxi. And you putt or chip or whatever you got to do with your ball where it lands. So these two guys are good golfers, but they are absolutely shit faced. They both hit the green. They go down to the little boat and it's 200 yards.
Right.
And they take all their clothes off, throw them in the boat. There's a ladies' luncheon at the right off the restaurant, and they stand up giving them a standing ovation.
No way.
They both jump in the water, butt naked. And they start swimming across. And one of them halfway over stopped because he didn't think he was going to make it. And he was going to go back. But
Jesus.
He realized he was halfway. So he put his head down and just powered his way across and made it. And we asked him after, why'd you stop? And he goes, I thought I was going to drown.
Oh, no.
Driving out towards me, and I'm going, oh, God.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. God. This could be trouble.
And he goes, you guys have been the best group we've ever had here. I said, even those two? He goes, even better. The ladies' luncheon thought we planned it.
Oh,
they
no
loved
way.
Loved it or something
like
that.
Like a male stripper.
Goes, they loved it. So anyways, I was a little nervous, and I quickly told Paris the story before she heard it secondhand from her friends.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's always great stories. I'm sure people have lots of them too.
I'm going to save it for next week. Okay. I've got, you know, it's like when a guy tells a story, you're going like this. Okay. I can tell this, but I'll save them for next week. Great job. Thanks a lot to MC. That's a hilarious story about their trip to Pebble Beach. And we'll be back each and every week, of course, with another episode of the Suspendables. Rusty, what's up for you? Okay, I guess we gotta talk some hockey or something next week. No, we don't. Yep. Fuck that. Yeah, we're not doing that. Take care, everybody. Have a good week, and we will be back with another show with who knows what the fuck we're gonna be talking about. Okay, so take it easy, everyone. We'll talk to you later. See you, Russ.
See you, pal. That was good.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in LA. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.